Hi everyone, it's Amanda popping in here. Just before we kick off this episode on Yoni Health, I want to apologize for the technical difficulties that we have been having in uploading this episode. So if you've seen it bounce in and out of your feed, or if you listen to one of the versions with the tech glitches in it, then you have our sincerest apologies, and here it is, a beautiful, shiny episode ready for your ears. We really wanted to persevere with getting this episode up properly because it's a really good one. So I hope you enjoy it. And yeah, let us know if you have any feedback. Lots of love and enjoy this episode on Yoni Health. This is the Elevate Podcast, where we have conversations to elevate your health, relationships, and soul. I'm Amanda Noga. I'm a yoga and Ayurveda practitioner, and each week I'm joined by my co-host, holistic health coach, Sarah Hopkins. So let's dive into this week's episode. Hello, my loves. Welcome back to the Elevate Podcast. Today, we're talking about the juicy, delicious topic of Yoni Health. But before we dive into the waters, what's going on down there in the most isolated city on the planet?
The most totalitarian city on the planet? Is that what you mean?
Not what I said.
I'll say it. Well, I was actually just about to tell you this and then we decided to take it online. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like probably most of our updates, certainly from here in Oz, will be related to the really rapidly changing sort of life circumstances for those that perhaps choose not to participate in an experimental gene therapy trial. But, yeah, one of the most enduring and well-known organic stores is closing down because they don't want to adhere to the mandates, and I suppose don't want to force their staff to adhere to those mandates, so they're going to be moving online. Yeah, and I
so they won't be able to have a shop.
No, and what I was going to say is it's really interesting, and again, this is a conversation that we had in our little catch-up episode at the beginning of the season, is that it's really interesting to see how people are adapting so that they can stay aligned with their values.
I love that.
I love that too. You know, like I have friends that are chiropractors that have pivoted and, you know, are taking time out from their chiropractic work to maybe do health coaching. I have friends that are doctors that are now, you know, have stepped away from that profession for the meantime. You know, there are people that know their core values, that know what their priorities are, what's important to them, what aligns with those beliefs and values, and, you know, what they need to do in order to be in alignment.
Yeah, you know? I mean, humans are adaptable. That's one of our great skills, our great qualities of being human, is our resilience and our ability to evolve according and, to our environment, like any animal.
Exactly. And no disrespect to people that have decided to have it, but I'm really proud of those people that have been able to stay true to what feels right for them, you mm-hmm. know, in the face of a lot of pressure, in the face of a lot of judgment.
And great sacrifice.
Great sacrifice.
Yeah, I mean, we won't say the name for just, I guess, privacy's sake, but I used to work at that organic shop.
Yeah.
And one of the best things about working there and about shopping there for the customers was the conversations that happened, you know, between us, the staff, and the people that would come in. It was honestly like sometimes a therapy session for people to come and share. A lot of people that were shopping organic at that time were doing so for health reasons.
Yes.
So a lot of people were coming in with, you know, in the midst of big challenges that they were going through. And yeah,
It's sad to know that those conversations won't be happening in that way, in that space. But again, really cool that people can adapt and still get their organic produce.
I mean, this should be like basic human right to have access to organic food.
That's pretty much.
Isn't that interesting though to think, like, that must be happening the world over to some degree. So just think all of the small businesses and presumably like health-based organic businesses, products, think of how many of those shops will be wiped off the street.
That's right.
That's an interesting side effect.
Yeah, and on the other side, the businesses that will flourish, like pharmacies and things like that, where there will be the dispensing of medications en masse.
Wow.
What about Bali? I hear the sound of all the different birds and bees and insects in the background there, the cacophony of tropical chorus.
My friends down here, the frogs and the chickens and the the little birdies.
Yes. Any updates from Bali?
Well, the most exciting news today is that this is like so classic Bali, but on the 11th of the 11th, which is in a few days, a new breathwork and like sauna cold plunge center is opening near us. So that's exciting stuff happening down here.
That's amazing. I want to put a cold plunge here. Nobody has it here.
I know people that have made them at home using a massive freezer.
Yeah.
And once you've kind of got it set up with ice water initially, it's actually pretty low maintenance to run.
I need a sauna though, and I don't have the sauna component.
Well, you can have a solar sauna in the in the summertime.
That's true. That's definitely
sit in
true.
The sun for 10 minutes. But yeah, I don't know. It's funny in Bali, like we've been closed for 2 years almost, and the construction is relentless. Even still, they just don't stop, and new businesses are continuing to pop up and flourish. So it's interesting.
And
the economy has definitely changed here. Obviously, there's no tourists, but it means that the very touristy areas are kind of transforming, and like where we live, catering more to people that live, that actually live here. Where we live, there hasn't been a grocery store ever because people don't do grocery shopping when you're on holidays, So the nearest grocery store is like 35 minutes away, but a new health food shop's opening like right in the village. So yeah, it's cool. Things are like, again, adapting and people are making it work.
What do you think is going to happen? Because I know, well, certainly my family, well, my mum in particular, is dying to come to Bali, and I think she thinks that that will be happening shortly, like once WA's borders open, which they're saying will be early next year. So I'm, wondering what will that change again? Will all of those sort of highly populated tourism areas like sort of come back to how they were? What's your feelings on that?
It will take a long time to come back. When you drive down the main road in Ubud or Seminyak, it is a ghost town. It's really eerie.
It's unbelievable.
90% of the shops are shut and have been for years now. And, those people aren't coming back. Like, it's not,
I know,
it's not that easy.
Yeah.
The businesses are crushed.
Yeah.
So domestic tourism is open already. So we do have a lot of people coming from Jakarta. And again, that's a different economy. Again, they want different things to what the European and Australian tourists want. So catering again to a different market. Well, I don't think tourism is ever going to be the same anywhere in the world. In Bali, the main economy is tourism, as most people know. So it's definitely been very, very obvious here, the big kind of impact that COVID has had. But I don't think we're going to see tourism in the same way or travel in the same way that we had previously ever again. It's going to be
a lot more expensive. So I think, you know, a certain percentage of the population are basically going to be priced out of travel and tourism. So it's going to be different. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens. But to answer your question, no, I don't think things are going to be the same anytime soon. It's going to take a really long time to return, because also the economy is crushed. It's not like people can just open up their shops again and start business where they left off. Like, those people have left and gone and done other things. And it's been such a long time now.
Yeah. And what else?
We just moved house, which is always exciting. Probably the longest time I'd ever lived in a house in the last 5 years or so. We lived in Uluwatu for a year. And now we've moved to a different part of Bali, to a new house, and it feels really, really good. But something that I have been doing lately that is kind of really, you know, like consuming me right now is I'm doing a course on vocal activation in a way. It's not called that, but it's everything to do with the voice, from speaking to singing to channeling to toning. And as you know, I have had this ongoing kind of blockage with my throat and, you know, speaking my truth and expressing my feelings and all those sort of things, and has kind of just become bigger and bigger and bigger problem in a way. And now I feel like my body has gone like, zero tolerance now for not using your voice effectively and honestly. As you know, I had that throat infection for like almost 2 months that was so bad. It was like screaming at me to look seriously at what's going on with my throat and my voice. So I just had a call for that this morning, and it's just, yeah, giving me so, 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 so much to work with. It's awesome. And this is a segue.
I think I'm about to segue what you're about to segue. The vocal cords look exactly like the vulva.
There is such a connection between the throat and the yoni. Like, that is...
I know. I just, as you were talking about that, I was like, oh my God, that is the most amazing segue into, and to be honest, I mean, I knew from a birthing perspective that like opening the mouth and making those sounds and the jaws connection to the pelvis and everything relaxed. But the other day, Rafa watches like these kids shows that are like, they just talk about science experiments and stuff. They're just, you know, it's like educational kids shows. And they had like a picture of the vocal cords, like as people were singing and making sounds. Like, and you could see them, like it was like either like a camera or something that was down the throat. And I was,
and you're like,
I was like, that looks exactly like a vulva.
Yeah, completely. And so the anatomy reflects in these two parts of the body. So we have the glottis in the throat, which is that kind of valve in the throat, which mirrors the cervix. It's kind of the same anatomical structure. Even like we call the cervical spine, like that part of our spine in our neck around our throat, that's kind of cervix. The same word. It's a cervix.
Yeah.
Cervical
that's
spine.
Crazy.
There's so many things. And so even the pelvic floor also mirrors the throat, the muscles there. It's really, really cool. There's so many parallels. And so we see in the anatomy, and what I'm realizing through this course, and it came up in Sage's birth, as anyone that has listened to my birth story here on the pod will know, the theme of speaking my truth and expressing myself clearly was a massive, massive learning for me during that birth process, you know. So there's no doubt for me personally that these two parts of the body are linked. And so whatever we're holding in the yoni, we're holding in the throat. It's so interesting.
Yeah, amazing.
So I'm throwing around this word yoni like everyone knows what I'm talking about, but in case it's a kind of foreign word, it is a Sanskrit word actually. So it does come from the world of the Vedas and yoga and all of this sort of stuff, but it's kind of been adopted, I would say, by the mainstream rhetoric around vaginas and vulvas, and I think it's kind of a seen as a palatable word. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
It's kind of like a nice, pretty word. And it's a beautiful word. In the Sanskrit definition, it means like, you can understand it to mean like sacred space or sacred temple, and the idea that the yoni, including, you know, like the vulva, the vagina, the womb, kind of everything in this region of the body, is a sacred space. That was, you know, very clearly stated and understood. So in a way, it's kind of like reclaiming this part of the body as sacred and using a word that also reflects that, rather than all these like horrible words that we've been using culturally for however many generations. And when I was thinking about like how we speak to little girls about the yoni as well, like using silly words, and it's like those have been the two. Yeah, like pee-pee or like cookie or fluffy or whatever, like all these stupid words.
Yeah.
As like either it's a silly word that kind of doesn't mean anything. It can be kind of confusing.
And condescending or dismissive.
Yes. Or it's a kind of gross and objectified word.
Yeah.
So anyway, I like the word yoni. And that's what we're here to talk about today. We're going to talk about all things yoni health. And I think most women have at some point had something going on in this part of the body, you know, like whether it's irregular periods or, you know, really heavy or intense periods to, oh, I don't know, like ongoing thrush or UTIs or more serious things like PCOS or endo. There's just so many things that can go on and that do manifest as imbalances in this part of our body.
Hello, it's Sarah here, and I'm just briefly interrupting this episode to tell you a little bit more about what I offer. So I've worked with literally hundreds and hundreds of women, helping them transform their health, hormones, fertility, and more. And I absolutely love working one-on-one with women because we're all uniquely different. So if you're interested in learning more about coaching with me, or if you're ready to book an initial consultation, you'll find the link in the show notes. I look forward to hearing from you.
I think, like, let's be a bit more specific, if you don't mind, with the, like, what we talk about today in regards to the yoni, because I think, you know, we are going to do a topic that is more related to higher up, which is like where your endometrium is, like further in where your ovaries are. When we're talking about the yoni, we're talking about the vagina, which is the, you know, canal, I suppose, where the penis enters and where the baby comes out, and the vulva, which is the, you know, the bits on the outside, so to speak, you know, which I mean, prior to the last couple of years, I really think most people thought that the vagina was the vulva or vice versa. Yeah. You know, and now it's like there's been a more, I feel like, collective
reclaiming of this.
Reclaiming, yes. Word. And a collective sort of attempt to distinguish and give, I don't know, more voice and attention to female genitalia, because we've never had it. You know, but I think when we're talking about the yoni, would you agree we're probably talking more about those areas? And so, you know, certainly period stuff does, you know, come out through the vagina, but that can also be higher. But a lot of the yoni stuff, I think, is like the stuff that you talked about, like UTIs and bacterial vaginosis and candida overgrowth and you know, even vaginismus, which is where, like, you know, like those sorts of things, which I think, I mean, I see so many women that have that stuff chronically, like all the time, you know, and most of us, I think, have had periods in their life. Certainly, you know, when I was younger and I was really out of balance, you know, putting aside the hormonal stuff, which I think is a little bit separate, which was like for me, the amenorrhea, I had like persistent recurrent thrush, like from probably like early puberty, like, you know, around the time of the onset of puberty for me, like around 13, probably into my mid to late 20s. Just, I was so thrushy, you know, and I was so prone to, you know, that area being out of balance. And I was so disconnected from that area and from so many other things, which we'll get into, you know, and it was such a reflection of so many other parts of my body that were out of balance, like physically and emotionally / spiritually. And so I feel like, I don't think there's a single woman alive, and certainly not one that would be listening to our podcast, that wouldn't be able to resonate with having had, you know, some sort of like yoni imbalance in their life.
Totally. Yeah. And because this part of our body, it does reflect so much of what's going on for us emotionally and energetically, it makes perfect sense to me that that's where we see these imbalances manifest for pretty much everybody. So you had recurring thrush. I had recurring UTIs from when I actually remember the first UTI, and wasn't recurring at this stage, but I remember having one when I was 6 in first grade.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Then through like my teen years, I had them nonstop. And then eventually they progressed into kidney infections. And I had like, I think 3 kidney infections back to back, leading to eventually being off school for like a term or something. And yeah, I agree. Like I don't think there's any woman that is not affected at some point in their life by an imbalance playing out in this part of the body.
Totally. And I mean, where do you want to start? Do you want to talk about some of the spiritual stuff, or do you want to talk about more of the physical stuff?
Well, from the Ayurvedic perspective, we can pretty much say, and of course goes without saying, but I'll say it again, everything in Ayurveda is individualized. So when I speak to these topics, it is with a broad brushstroke. It is a little bit more complex and more nuanced if we're working one-on-one, for sure. But we can say, pretty generally speaking, that most of the imbalances that play out in the yoni area are symptoms of excess vata. So when we think about vata in this realm, it's about movement. Vata governs everything to do with movement and change. And so when we think about the movement of our periods, you know, the uterine lining coming down and out, when we think about urine coming down and out, when we think about, you know, all of these different movements that are happening in this part of the body and changes, that's how we can understand that connection to vata. And so I think it's pretty obvious as well that most women fall into the camp of having excess vata if we're living in like a modern technocentric culture, you know. Definitely. Most people are experiencing excess vata. And so we see all of these imbalances playing out in the yoni.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like also a lot of the imbalances in the yoni environment also reflect those imbalances at a more greater, larger, at a systemic level, I guess I should say. So, you know, typically if I have a client that has recurrent BV, bacterial vaginosis, or recurrent thrush infections, you know, then we know that their gut is out of balance.
Right.
So, you know, and so there are things that we can do, or that I suppose, even to simplify it even further than that, at a metabolic level, that they are out of balance. And so if, you know, again, coming back to our last conversation about fasting and about, you know, not necessarily even the what that you eat, but the how that you eat. If the, if you are metabolically dysregulated at a cellular level, then that allows for that proliferation of bacteria and yeast, right? And that bacteria and yeast proliferation in the gut will then also reflect in those other areas, like, you know, in the armpits it can be as well, like that your body odor anywhere mm-hmm. where there is like a greater concentration of bacteria and yeast, and there is in, you know, in the area of our vulva, in the area of our vagina, you know, in those areas.
Oh, gosh. I just feel like, I don't know, we're just women. I have this thought quite often. Like, I feel like we, of course, like being a woman is amazing and we get to like create life and we have this, you know, incredible connection to the cycles and all of this stuff. But I really feel like we get the short end of the stick quite a lot. We have to deal with, I mean, periods I think can be a real gift. I'm kind of at that place where I do really love having a period, but like we have to get fucking miscarriages and oh, just like all of the things that happen within a woman's life.
So if you think about the woman's experience from a yoni perspective, right, I'm really confident having worked with hundreds of women now and just even anecdotally talking to so many, you know, other women and friends and things that, you know, most women do experience, like we've said, like some sort of imbalance in their yoni area at least once in their life and typically more often than that. But if you think about a man from adolescence through to adulthood, like, and his, you know, relationship with his genitalia, with the penis and its vulnerability to that sort of stuff, it's like, I could be wrong, but I'm guessing that a conversation with my husband about, you know, did you ever have weird things happening with your penis? I'm pretty sure the answer would mostly be no.
Totally.
And it's funny because the penis, like, especially, I mean, circumcised or not, you know, because obviously our generation and slightly older, there was a lot more circumcised male genitals than there are now, but the penis is a lot less vulnerable.
Yeah, which is interesting to kind of think about just as like in theory, because it's all out and exposed.
I know.
And we've got everything up and protected, but we've got all this shit going on.
But we have to have the stinking penises in there.
Actually, I feel like this does kind of tie back to what I was saying last week in the fasting episode. I think this pandemic of imbalance in the yoni, can't even use that word anymore, has really got to do with our disconnect from the feminine energy as a whole, you know, like definitely. Nothing to do with the female and gender, but really speaking energetically, our disconnect from nature, our disconnect from cycles, our disconnect from, our femininity as a whole, and either having to be in this overtly sexualized flavor of feminine energy, for some women doesn't feel authentic at all, or it's the other end of the spectrum, being completely shut down and in this, it's like a religious thing, like the maiden or the whore. What is it? Madonna?
Yeah, the Madonna or the whore. Yeah, exactly. So
yes. It's like that, even if we're not participating in religion, we are still inheriting these huge, you know, like deep storylines that run through our culture and our society. Definitely. I can only really speak for myself, but I can see in other cultures and other religions, like here in Bali, being, you know, in the Middle East and in Africa, there's also different ways in which sexuality and femininity have been shut down and rejected.
And I think that inherited shame, which, you know, if you think about it, if you're not being modeled a healthy acceptance and love of the, let's even just bring it back to the yoni, right? So if your mm-hmm. mother had that shame around her yoni and around her sexuality, and that was what was modeled to you, you're going to inherit that, right? And so I think, you know, and like Dr. Christine Northrup talks about this, and lots of other more sort of, what's that other lady, Louise Hayes, sort of talks about this as well, that when there is like an inherent sense of shame around the female sexuality, that then when you are sexually active, you're way more susceptible to those infections that are sort of manifesting probably in the presence of sex, but as a byproduct of that shame. So at a spiritual level, it's like an inherit, like you said, it's that inherited shame around that area and that discomfort with that area that then creates like imbalance, you know, physically.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the first and most important things that every woman can do, or most women can do if you're experiencing a cycle, or even if you're not experiencing a regular cycle, you can definitely still do this, is to start breaking down the shame and the stigma around periods. And this starts, you know, when we're teenagers, obviously, when we first get our period, the way that we responded to by our mother and, you know, our caregivers and our friends in that moment really does shape the way that we relate to our period as a whole. And so I know for a lot of women around my age and your age, we've sort of reclaimed the period as well. Mm. And through tracking our cycles, I mean, I'm sure women were doing this forever before, but I think it's become a lot more popular now and a lot more mainstream. Yeah, to track our cycle is, I think, one of the most important things that every single woman can do, and that not only starts to break down the shame and stigma and allows us to move into this space of being in relationship with our cycle and falling in love with our cycle, but it also allows us to nip imbalances in the bud. And when it comes to the phase of life of either preventing pregnancies or conceiving, it's so important for that. And I've been learning a lot more recently about fertility awareness method as, you know, a more detailed way of tracking your cycle. And I just think it's so, so important that we teach young girls about this.
Definitely.
It's so cool.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, there does need to be, and I think that the vulva stuff is, you know, helping with this, because I think there does need to be more modeling of, or conversations around the yoni, you know, and like the vulva and the vagina.
Well, yeah, it's like a refinement of our understanding of what all of this stuff down here is.
Yeah. You
know, so even that embrace of the word vulva shows that as a collective, we are getting a little bit more conscious and more refined in our knowledge of this part of the body. So, of course, the next generation of girls are going to be, you know, leaps and bounds ahead of us in terms of where they're at in their relationship to their period, to sex, to their femininity. All of that stuff is going to be just on another level for them.
Hopefully.
But I think what's really cool, it will. It has Hopefully. To, because once we start having that relationship with our own bodies and moving into, you know, like sovereignty with ourselves, it's so empowering, and it changes the way that we relate to not just sex and not just our period, but literally everything in our whole life. Like when you're tracking your cycle and noticing, you know, like what is the quality of the period blood, and noticing changes from month to month, and begin to pay attention and bring more awareness, then we start to understand like, oh, okay, this month I ate really shit, or I partied a lot and look how it's reflected in my cycle. Or, oh yeah, this month I've drank too much coffee, or this month I've been really stressed, or I'm grieving, or whatever it might be. Or, you know, this month was awesome. I had like really, you know, easeful, healthy, balanced kind of month, and look how easy breezy my period is now. All of that, it's like almost an instant feedback, you know, month on month. The body's telling us all the time, like, hey, this isn't working. Hey, this is working. And so that can only be empowering. It has to work.
And I think to add another layer to that, I think that your yoni can also give you some insight into so many other like physiological functions in your body. Like it's a bit like, it's like all the orifices, like, sorry, if that's gross, but it's like sometimes we, you know, if someone has really bad breath, like obviously there's some systemic imbalance, like there's gut stuff going on, you know, maybe there's some detox pathways that aren't working properly as well. And it's like, but a lot of times people don't know that. But with your yoni, you can stick your finger in there. You can look at the discharge that's coming out. You can smell your underwear. Like it's not that's not disgusting, hopefully, you know, and it's an opportunity to see if you're healthy or not, you know, like it's another thing, like you said, like your cycle that you can actually tap into. And I think with your cycle, you can really harness in ways to leverage, you know, what you're doing as well. And we've spoken about that in the period episode way back when, and we can talk about it again. But, you know, I think that the health of your yoni, or being more present with your yoni, like observing the quality of your yoni from a health perspective, is going to give you insight into how well you are. I know, you know, I was constantly conscious of my yoni and that it wasn't healthy for all of those years, right? I was always like, oh God, I can feel that I'm a bit thrashy, and oh, you know, and it made sex uncomfortable or awkward if I was, you know, it was always there. And now I'm really conscious of my yoni, but for the most part, my yoni's pretty happy, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like that to me is reassuring, that for the most part, I'm pretty balanced. And sometimes I might feel like I'm a little bit thrashy. I actually feel like I get a little bit, sort of feel a bit irritated right before my period to bring it back to the cycle. And then usually I'm like, I know when I'm due, and I'm like, oh, that's something that happens for me right before I bleed, so I don't worry too much about it. But, you know, it's good. It is another tool that we can use to really check in with our body. It's another opportunity that our body gives us to really reflect on and adjust where we need to bring ourselves to a higher level of health.
Totally. The body's giving us so much feedback all the time. It's kind of unbelievable, like when we do get really really sick, it's like, hello, the body's giving us like 50 other signals before, you know, a chronic illness comes on. And all of these things that we talk about pretty much every single week really come back to just paying attention, being more present with our life, you know, and paying attention to our periods. And when I'm saying periods, I kind of mean like paying attention to the quality of the blood and also the quality of cervical fluid around ovulation. Those are really two super clear markers of where we're at, and they're going to reflect pretty quickly where our health is at. Just like when we're paying attention to our poo, we see pretty quickly, okay, this is working, this is not working, body's happy, body's not happy. It's like pretty obvious, and we get that feedback every single day. So when there is a little imbalance, and like you said, when we're paying attention, you can feel, okay, like for you, this example of getting a bit thrashy before you get period, because you have been paying attention, you know that that's normal and that's just part of your pattern and nothing to worry about. And the other huge benefit of that is paying attention, we can nip things in the bud. So if you are starting to feel like, oh, okay, I'm a bit thrashy, like you can do so many different things to help your body get rid of that before it turns into a full-blown infection, you know, like you might whack some coconut oil on or change some things in your diet for the next few days. Like, there's so many things we can do to support the body in healing, but the body is always moving towards healing. It's always like leaning towards that direction of balance.
And that's why it's communicating with you, hey, you need to pay attention to this, because right now this is a potential infection on the way, or in your case, a throat infection.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, the period tracking one is a really, really good one. And I know we are going to do an entire episode on that, so maybe we won't extrapolate too much. But shall we pivot into some of the things that we can do to improve yoni health?
Yeah, but I just was thinking, like, you know, for you, there's the thrush example. But for me, if I feel like I'm getting run down or my adrenals are shot, you know, if I've been too stressed or not sleeping, I can feel like, oh, I'm on the verge of a UTI. And I feel it first in my kidneys, and I can feel that they're tender. And that's, yeah, also just a big communication to me of what I need to do. But it never, these days, it never turns into a proper UTI infection. So yeah, it's just cool. But I did have UTIs for 10 years straight, and kidney infections from when I was about, I'd say 16 to 26, ongoing all the time.
Mm. Mm.
So there are many, many things we can do to support our yoni. And like you said, tracking the cycle is kind of first and foremost. If you're not already, why not? just do it. Like, by the way, I heard something kind of weird and creepy about, you know, the period tracking apps. We have recommended in the past, but I've actually moved away from using them.
Oh my God, I feel like I know what you're
going to say. You know what I'm going to say,
That they're tracking
we
us.
Must have listened to the same thing.
No.
I can't remember where I heard this. But so just to kind of give some context, there's period tracking apps. I used to use one called Clue. I have definitely recommended them in the past, but what I've more recently moved towards, I think I started doing this when my period came back after having my baby. I have gone back old school to just using a notebook, and I'm finding that much more clear and in picking up patterns, and I can track, make notes on all different days. And I know you can do that within the app as well, but for me, the old school notebook is just really, I don't know, feels good.
Yeah, before you talk more about that, but is it because what I like about the app is that there's a visual there and I can see the calendar and I can see like roughly when my ovulatory days are, and then I can see, oh yeah, I'm getting my period roughly around then, because my cycle's a little bit sometimes less than 28 days at the moment because it's perimenopause.
So the way that I set up the notebook, and I don't know if I spoke about this on the period episode, but just with a blank notebook, label the top of each page, day one, day two, day three, day four, day five, up to however many days you need, maybe like up to 35 days if your cycle is sometimes long. And then you just go through like, okay, I get my period, day one, I write the date. I personally put in where the moon phase is at, and then anything of note, you know, anything that might be interesting or not interesting. I usually just go through a kind of a little mini scan of like physically, mentally and emotionally what's going on. And then day two, turn the page, do the same sort of thing. And then you just go through the whole month. And I know that for me, I always, well, not always, but I definitely ovulate between this window of like day 10 to 14. And I don't know. I know what you mean about the having the visual of the app is nice, and you could definitely still use the app and then also have the notebook for extra notes. But I've kind of, what I was going to say before, I've stopped using the app so much because I learned that, and like, surprise, surprise, why didn't we think that they were going to do this? Like, why would we assume that they wouldn't? But basically, the period tracking apps sell our data to Facebook and other media companies so that we get advertised specific products at different times in our cycle depending on what we might be more susceptible to buy.
Oh my God, of course.
It's pretty manipulative.
Yeah, that's so bad.
And I don't know about you, but I've noticed that in my autumn week, I often feel I want to like go on a spending spree. Like I feel very spendy, like impulsive buy mood.
Yeah, yes.
In autumn, I don't know why, but it happens every time. So if I was
and for context,
you know, shot some ads, then
yeah. I'd and for context, done. For anyone that hasn't listened to our period episode, autumn is the week before the period, premenstrual zone. Week. Yes.
So, yeah, if anyone wants more info on how to do that diary thing, the journal thing, let me know and I can do like a story or something on Instagram. But it's pretty simple. And for me, it just feels, yeah, it feels better. And I also don't want to be giving all that info to an app. No. People might think I'm being paranoid, but whatever. To be honest, I don't input data into my journal every day. Because some days there's nothing really to say.
Yeah, like, okay.
I only do it, but I would recommend if you're starting out, definitely do it every day because that's when you're going to start to notice the patterns. But because I've been doing this already for 5+ years, I know where my patterns are, you know, more or less. Mm-hmm. And I like to just put in things of note, things that are kind of, you know, worth noting down, not just every damn day. But there's lots of other things that we can talk about. So something else, I don't know if you've ever done this, but yoni steaming is a practice from the world of Ayurveda and lots of traditional cultures. They still do it here in Bali. There's special temples for women specifically, and they'll go and do their yoni steam, and you can go there when you've got your period and stuff like that.
All I can think about is that episode of Cancelled where they mocked Gwyneth Paltrow for her yoni steaming and said that someone burnt their vulva.
God. Well, yeah, you could, but
yeah,
I mean, you could also burn your hand making a cup of coffee.
I know. I was just, oh, that episode. Anyway, yes. Oh.
But yeah, maybe Gwyneth is the one that popularized yoni steaming. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think so.
Probably. But yeah, yoni steaming is a really, really nice practice, especially if there are imbalances going on. Irregular cycles or any of the other things that we mentioned, like UTIs or thrush or painful periods or, yeah, lots of many signs and symptoms of imbalance can be targeted with different herbs. So if you're not sure what I'm talking about, yoni steaming is, yeah, using a specific blend of herbs. You don't just want to whack like any old rose petals into your steam. It is quite specific, and you have to think of it like a medicinal supplement for your yoni. Mm. It's kind of serious stuff. Like, you're not just like making a tea and making some nice kind of fragrances. It's specific herbs do very specific things to the pH and, yeah, all of the things that are going on. And so specific herbs, you can get like especially custom made special little seats, or you can just do it old school like me and put it in a pot and then squat over the pot and wrap your sarong around your lower half and kind of just sit there for 10, 15, 20 minutes. You just let the steam come up and into your vagina, womb area, and it just feels nice and relaxing.
That sounds good. I want to do it.
Have you done it?
No, I've never done it.
Do it.
I will, but I need the special formulas for the different things. I mean, or can I just do steam, plain old steam?
I would look into that more. Maybe there's benefits of doing plain steam, but
you can give me some tips offline.
I will
offline.
Pop a link in the show notes of where you can get the best and most amazing steam blend.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay. I have a link, and yeah, we'll pop that in the show notes. But yeah, it's a super nice practice for anyone to do. Obviously, there's times of the month where you wouldn't want to do it, especially if you are wanting to conceive. If you're pregnant, it's a no-no. That probably goes without saying. But yeah, it's something to be educated on when you start doing this practice, and you can easily find more info on it. There's a good website called Steamy Chick. I don't think you can get the herbs from her in Australia, but she has a lot of good resources for sure.
Okay, my love, it's Amanda here. And instead of telling you about my yoga and Ayurveda offerings as per usual, if you want to learn about what I'm currently offering, go to yogaalchemy.com.au and you can see if there's one-on-ones available, group mentoring, teacher training, and all that stuff. What I'm really here to tell you about today is Karma Collab. So many of you are already familiar with this project that I started about 7 years ago in support of women and girls in rural India and also now here in Bali. Karma Collab is entering, as we go into this new year, its next evolution, its next phase. And part of that is a brand new jewelry collection where all of the proceeds go to providing education for girls and also providing support for mothers through pregnancy, birth, and postpartum. So it's something that I'm really excited about. And there's lots of other ways that we can join forces and really empower ourselves through the act of giving and receiving. So if you want to learn more about Karma Collab, join our mailing list, go to karmacollab.org. The link will be in the show notes, of course, and come and follow us on Instagram. So much love is poured into this project, and I'm really excited to have you as part of our global network of women who support other women through real action and activism. Mwah.
And the other one that both of us have used, although I haven't used mine for quite a while, but maybe this is the little push I need to get it out again, is the yoni egg. And I feel like the yoni egg has become pretty popular these days. Most people know what a yoni egg is, but for those that don't, it is obviously, as described, it is an egg usually made out of some sort of crystal or jade or something. And
yeah, traditionally jade.
Jade, yeah. And maybe it's an Eastern tradition, isn't it? It's like maybe from somewhere in Asia or Southeast Asia that it originated.
I think in China.
Okay. And Kim Anami, who we can link in the show notes, was probably, you know, one of the pioneers of the jade, and she was specifically the jade egg. And now I feel like, you know, lots of people have sort of turned it into all sorts of crystals. And the idea with the jade egg is that, well, you can use it for pelvic floor toning. So you can actually, there's lots of information on how to use it like a weight to tone the pelvic floor and to strengthen your pelvic floor. But I think maybe you can expand on this, Mans, that lots of people use it, and I'm not super knowledgeable on this, although obviously I've got one and I've used it, for different qualities of different crystals to sort of provide potentially some healing by just popping that particular crystal into the yoni. Do you see any sort of validity in that? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I do think that is valid and definitely a practice a lot of people love. So you can get
rose quartz
is a really common one. Is that
black, like, obsidian, you know, like those exactly. sorts of things. Yeah,
I've got this really kind of psychedelic blue crystal from Hawaii, and I've been using that every time I'm going into my calls for my voice course. And so I'm like kind of imprinting, because the blue, the reason I'm making that connection is blue is the color for the throat chakra. So I'm like anchoring this, you know, energy in my body and in my egg, and it feels to me related for sure. But I wanted to touch on something that I found really interesting. So, you know, Kegels is a pretty commonly known pelvic floor exercise, and Kegels actually don't do shit if you don't have a weight or a device in there. So when the guy, Mr. Kegel, he's a physio, when he first invented this exercise for women, which how annoying is it that it's like another thing named after a male doctor for the female anatomy? But anyway, I think we spoke about this when I was pregnant. I was obsessed with this topic of like renaming all of the parts of the body that have been colonized by men. But anyway, when he first invented the Kegel exercises, which is basically engaging and disengaging exercises. The pelvic floor,
yeah,
it was designed to be done with a device inserted into the vagina. And so you would clench onto this device and then release, clench, release, clench, release, right? And it had amazing results. And then as time went on, physios who were, you know, teaching and recommending this practice kind of like through the grapevine did away with the device and were just teaching women to clench, release, clench, release, clench, release. But there's no point in doing that. I'm sorry for anyone that has been doing their Kegels like at their desk for years, but it doesn't do shit. It's just like curling your bicep and opening your arm, curling your bicep, opening your arm without a weight in your arm. It's doing nothing. You need a weight. So that's why doing the exercises with the egg is not only like the original practice from way back thousands of years ago, maybe from China, we're not sure, but I'm sure we can see this practice across all ancient cultures as well. That is why the results are so amazing. You know, not only are we strengthening and toning the quality of the pelvic floor, but a lot of women actually need to learn how to release and to disengage, not just clench. Most women at this point, we're actually holding too much tension.
We're hypertonic. Yeah. For sure.
So the release part's really, really important. And it also like brings more blood flow, more circulation to this part of the body. What were you going to say? And
I was just going to say, I think that that's what is also, you know, an uninitiated woman finds out about yoni eggs and then goes and gets a yoni egg and then she just inserts the yoni egg and leaves it in for
right.
however long. Like, I feel like that's like the most common practice when women haven't, you know, listened to some experts around yoni eggs like Kim and Ami, where, you know, and so they're just holding it in there, which, like you just said, is encouraging that hypertonicity, which, you know, for most women, they're already really tight in their pelvic floor. They don't need mm-hmm. that. Like you said, they need to let go. They need to release. And mm-hmm. so it's perpetuating that because, like, they have to hold onto the egg tightly to mm-hmm. keep it in. And so, yeah, I think if you want to invest in a yoni egg, it's really important that you also maybe – you know, there are people out there that are selling, you know, programs. I know even Rosie Rees has one, which we can link all of this in the show notes. I know you've got a discount code for that. But yes, there's people that also can guide and teach you how to actually use the yoni egg appropriately. So you're not just sticking it up there because that's...
Yeah, just like the steaming practice, we have to be educated about what we're doing. And like you said, whacking it in there and just walking around for your day or even putting it in at night and sleeping with it, it's like walking around with
a dumbbell
in your hand. Exactly right.
Yeah.
So you're just going to create more strain and tension in the pelvic floor. So that's definitely something really important. But I think going back to what you were mentioning about the, you know, different crystals and stuff that can be used, yeah, I think they all have different properties, and especially if you personally have a belief or an understanding in the power of crystals and are putting some intention into it, then that's definitely going to work. Like, that's really where the power is in your intention and your magic, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
Well, just like as a personal anecdote, and I really feel like it is connected and goes back to what we were saying about our yoni reflecting what's going on for us energetically and emotionally, spiritually. So for years and years and years, I was experiencing chronic ingrown hairs, like really bad. Some, you know, to the point of going to like a secondary infection and stuff like that. Like, if you felt that you were self-conscious about thrush, I was definitely self-conscious about ingrown hairs. It was so painful and just so persistent. And my amazing beautician at the time, she's such a funny woman. She's like this incredible, like, blonde, fake tan, fake eyelashes, looks like a total Barbie. And she's an amazing beautician. And she's highly psychic and intuitive. So I was just like, best combination. But she said to me at that time, she's like, oh, I think whoever you're like having sex with isn't the right person, because your body's clearly telling you — she used to call it your treasure. Your treasure is telling you that this energy is not wanted. And I was like, okay. But no joke, when I stopped having sex with that person, I have not had ingrown hair since.
Oh, my God. That's so amazing.
That's all I have to say. I have no science. I don't care.
Well, I remember having relationships. Like, I remember having one relationship in particular where I was always — and I know you had this nonstop for a long time, so, you know, different experiences — but I would always have a UTI. That was when I was in the exploratory stage. I was probably reading Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom, like, constantly. And I just sort of knew that it was like I wasn't meant to be having sex with him. Like, I just, I knew that it just didn't feel right, and that my vagina, my yoni, was actually saying, stop it. stop letting this penis up here. We're just going to give you —
we're going to reject
UTIs it until you stop having sex with him.
Well, so that's really interesting as well, because more recently now, I don't know like what is the definition of like vulvodynia, or what's the other?
Vaginismus.
Yeah, vaginismus. That's right. That's what the word I was looking for. I don't really know what the definition of that is, but in the third trimester of my pregnancy and in the 6 months postpartum, so probably 9 months in total, give or take, I was experiencing so much pain during sex, like, and if I was to insert anything, like at one point, even just to try, I put like a cotton bud into, like, inserted into my vagina, and it was so painful. It felt like I was putting a razor blade. It was just the most excruciating burning sensation. And I'm sure women listening to this podcast have experienced that. I don't know what the technical definition or if that's what I had, but to me, looking back, that was my body just saying, like, hey, no, like, we cannot handle penetration right now. And
yeah,
it was really quite a challenge, you know, especially in my relationship, because I was not experiencing any pleasure in sex. I was experiencing majority pain, and I didn't know how long it was going to last. Like, is this just forever now? It's really like debilitating. I don't know if that word sounds a bit extreme, but I do think our sexual life is a really important part of our life as a whole. And so when that is a part of your life that's causing like more pain than pleasure and more kind of anguish and heartache than anything else, it does kind of rock you, or it rocked me at least. Yeah, I can look back now and I wish like I could have just, I don't know, had someone say to me, you know, this is why we need like older, wise women in our communities and in our relationship, in our field, but just someone to say to me like, hey, it's okay, like it's gonna pass, you just need to be patient. But I can really see now my body was like, N-O. But anyway, so all that to say.
Well, I think that's a good way to start to wrap. I think there's so much connecting, you know, our yonis to whatever else is happening in our lives, right? And so there's so many opportunities within whatever messaging you're getting from your yoni to reflect on your health, on your relationship, on spirituality, on all of those things.
Yeah, I feel like we've only just scratched the surface with this conversation. So if it sparked anything in you, dear listener, definitely dive deeper. There's, yeah, lots of amazing resources and work to be done on this part of our body, especially if you are experiencing those signs of imbalance, like we said.
Yeah, and, you know, I know we're going to talk more specifically about some of the other issues related to that womb area, you know, but if we might expand out on lots of the different things that we've talked about today in future episodes. So if that is something of interest to you guys, make sure that you like and comment on either our Instagram page, which is the_elevate_podcast, and also leave us a review and leave us comments there as well, wherever you're listening.
And I think that's
it.
Thank you so much, as always, for listening to the Elevate podcast. And don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review so we can keep bringing these conversations to you all.